went into the army. You know, that horrible, that was my first taste, really, of racism, you know, ever. Because I never had been exposed to it, being in show business, you know. You know, you'd run into the average bit of it, but not enough to upset you or anything, you know, or not even to be aware of, because I'm in show business, so I wasn't aware of it. And as a kid being in show business, I didn't learn until later about why we slept in bus stations and why we had to go to the police and say, where's their colored family that you can stay with? Because you couldn't get in the hotels and things like that, and you couldn't eat in this restaurant. But there was a very close fraternity between most of the black and white performers at that time that doesn't exist today.
What were some specific examples of when you started first getting the message?
Well, I think the first real thing that I got was in the Army when I, you know, and I was in basic training, and I hadn't even gone to basic training. I went in San Francisco, we went to the Presidio Monterey, and the third day I was standing in line, and this is before desegregation came in the Army, you know. And I was standing in line and at this place where there was black and white soldiers, and the cat said, you know, where I come from, niggas, you know, stand in the back, and they ain't here. I forget the exact line. Now, and I had my duffel bag, not my duffel bag, but you know the thing like you used to carry your shaving equipment in? And I just sundied him, you know, and knocked him down and had cut his lip. And he's bleeding from the lip, and he said, okay, you knocked me down, but you're still a nigger. And that laid with me, you know, because that's so venomous. It really is. You know, that's the kind of cat that you ain't gonna never reach.
Were there some points at which you, during that time when you had a lot of pressures on you, almost lost confidence in yourself?
Oh, well, that happened to me, but not until I made it, really. Because, you know, when you're hungry and you're trying to get there, that's one thing. Because you've got that ambition that feeds on, and you keep crawling on your ambition to get there. And I got there, then I lost control of everything. Sense of values. Now I had got the doll so wound up. But there was no relaxing. There was no being aware of anything. First of all, there wasn't much to be aware of anyway in those days. But I mean, the nominal awareness that wasn't there. I was just wrapped up in me. Then I got scared because I started to lose what I thought was the basic human instinct that I had had. And I got too phony. I did it all, man. I invented some. The ones that are in the book, I invented some other problems, you know. But, I, you know, again, to relate to what you are, I sit today and I look back 25 years ago, and I say, wow, I don't think my head would be where it is now if I had not gone through that 25 years ago. All the mistakes, being on all the time, emulating the white stars, not trying to get my own identity, but because that was the kick then, you know. That's what you had to do. So I decided if you got to do it, then I'd do it better than anybody else had ever done it. You know, in other words, when I started to do impressions and all of that kind of stuff, relating to a theatrical thing, being on Broadway and Mr. Wonderful and all, I wanted to do all that because I figured if Donald O'Connor can do it, man, I'm going to do it. Instead, so in other words, I was becoming a black Donald O'Connor, a black Mickey Rooney, instead of becoming a black Sammy Davis.
What about the Rat Pack era? You and Sinatra and...
Well, let me tell you about the Sinatra thing. If it hadn't been for Frank Sinatra, I would have never been in films, really. Because he gave me an opportunity in three pictures based upon the fact that there was nothing to do, really, except the fact that we got the job because we were all friends and buddies. And it was based upon a camaraderie that we had as a bunch of guys, as performers, that Frank said, why don't we all do a picture together? But he helped my career tremendously. Again, my own personal involvement being such that I became so involved with that lifestyle that again, I found myself submerging into a lifestyle that I could not equate with. After you'd leave the party, you come home and you go like this. And you say, wow, man, it sure was nice to be in the company of all them big names and the movie star. But there was no, Now, on one hand, I loved being with my friends, but it was submerging me as a human being, I think, as I analyze it now. And there were beautiful moments during that period of the 60s, the early 60s, and there were some frightening moments. I remember walking on the stage at the Democratic Convention and being booed by the Southern contingent, you know, because they had no business. The only reason they booed me was because I was married to a white woman. You know, to put it right where it's at, that's why they booed me. Boo, hiss, how dare you be married to a white woman, you know. But it was...
Part of conversation, privately and publicly, is that you were married to a white woman. How do you feel about that? How would you advise a young black person, your son, about marrying a white woman?
I think a person should marry who they want to marry, man. I think that you can be committed to your people, to the cause, whatever the terminology you want to use. It doesn't matter who you're married to. If you fall in love, you fall in love. If you're getting, I don't think anyone gets married, has children, and the rest to do a three-sheeting job, you know. And to me, I feel no thing about it. I really don't. I really don't feel anything about that. Because I think that's so damn private, man. That has to do with what I want a cat to do. If it's a brother on the corner, whatever it is, look at me and say, what did you do today to help? Don't talk about my private life. That's mine. That if you know, if I want to marry a dog, that's my life. This is the point. Whatever I had, I paid my dues to get it. And I mean paid them. In every way you want to talk about. But that's professionally. That's as a human being on a professional level. But as a human being, period, I tell my kids, marry who you want to marry. Now, I know that as sure as I'm sitting on this floor, man, a whole bunch of brothers and sisters don't like me. There's a whole bunch of white people that don't like me.
Why do you feel there's a group of brothers and sisters who don't like you?
Because there was a whole bunch of brothers and sisters that didn't like Jesus Christ. That's why. And ain't nobody ever been put on this earth that everybody liked. They done killed Martin Luther King, and the only thing he kept singing was, "We shall overcome in love and peace." Killed him, wiped him out. Killed Malcolm. Wiped out everybody, man. Don't you understand? And some cat hired three black cats to wipe out the man who was the martyr of our time. And when they killed him, he had a half a church full of people. It wasn't like it was packed and jammed. Because already he was losing. And he says it himself, if you read his works, that there's a whole bunch of niggas that don't like me. Black folks like me, but not the niggas. Which is true. And three niggas knocked him off. Paid by white establishment. That's my feeling, and I will feel this as long as I live. And it was afterwards that the resurgence of this man, and suddenly we became aware of all the things that he was saying. Because as long as, doesn't it strike you funny, that as long as Malcolm was preaching separatism, as long as he was preaching such vehemence, he never got hurt at all. It was when he came back from Mecca and he said, we must all live together. We must as black people do our thing, but we must all live on this earth as one, blah, blah. That's when he started getting his house bombed. He got wiped out months later. Same thing with King. As long as King was hitting the marches, they put him in jail, that was it. As soon as he started talking about Vietnam and the workers and this, that, and the other, getting out of his field of reference, really, heavy, too heavy for somebody. Wipe him out. You know, and it's frightening to me. So that's why I say a lot of people will not like any performer. And you try to relate. As far, I'm not talking about relating in terms of, oh, hi, brah, and do the fist, and whatever it is. And, hey, man, right on. I'm not talking about the words. I'm talking about in your heart, relating to what the problems are. But the society in which we live in today, it has gotten to a point where you cannot do that anymore. Based upon the fact that I must do what I feel. If I feel that I want to help in this area, I try to do it, and I try to do it sans publicity. Not based upon the fear that I have for my job, but I think that sometimes if I want to help some brothers who are in trouble, my lending my name to it defeats the very purpose that they're trying to achieve. But money is money. Heart is heart.
You should lend your heart and your money. And if you ain't got the money, then lend this. Lend your body, man, to it. You know. But I'm talking about, I think that if the performer can be used, then he should be used. To put my obligation into black positive things. I'm not talking about national organizations. It can be something that's happening on the corner. A project that... Because I found out, and Walter Mason can tell you, we found out that you go into a town, and sometimes it's as little as $100, because you go to an area where some projects are, and they got a recreation center, ain't got no pool table, ain't got no records to play, so the kids don't go there, they hang on the corner. Right? Jesus, you walk in, and you look around, and you say, hey, well, I know I can get a pool table, and I know I can get the record player, and I'll get Reprise at that time, or my own company, to send records.
You're in a privileged situation. First of all, I can't help but make an analogy between yourself and Lena Horne. I mean, the two of you are, for lack of a better phrase, are superstars, are using, to some extent, your sense of commitment. You're evolving a new sense of self, and most importantly, like, you're going in front of the nation, and you're saying, I'm black and I'm proud, and I'm relating to my people. I'm not going to use anybody's name, but I'm sure you won't. But we're the heads of a lot of the black superstars. We don't see them like we see you in Philadelphia with the street gangs. We don't see them saying what Lena said in terms of what's happened to her.
Well, I think they're phonies. That's what I think. And the bitter irony of it all is that, again, I have to sit by, man, and watch these people be lauded by our brothers and sisters in the streets. And the brothers and sisters must be aware that they ain't doing nothing. But it took me a long time to get there. Maybe my brothers and sisters who are superstars need that kind of time. And there are many who say, I don't want to get involved in it. But I don't know how you cannot get involved in it, because they are, first of all, black, and they are committed. Whether they want to be committed or not. The very nature of the skin commits you. I don't read a script that I don't weigh and say, I wonder what the brother in the corner is going to think about this. How can I change it if it's wrong? Because the black performer, again, has that obligation, that we are black performers. And so, therefore, I'm not talking about you got to come out every time, man, and do a number. Because, like on Laugh-In, you know, I do jokes. But somewhere along the line, I've got to relate to what's really happening. Somewhere. So that the brother who's watching me, who may not necessarily buy my records, may not go to my movies, may not come to the Copa, the Sands Hotel to see me, will say, yeah, in a bar or in his house. Yeah. That's all. That's my thanks. But the black audience owes that black performer an obligation of watching and supporting him. Unless he turns out to be really the rat of all time. But I mean, when I say rat, I mean he's not doing anything. He's doing things that embarrass the black population. Now, I know a lot of people don't like Flips doing the Deacon. I've heard a lot of talk about it.
Geraldine
they don't like. Now, my personal thing is I think Geraldine's funny. I feel a little funny about the Deacon. Because I think that's going back to something that's so deeply rooted in black people, religiously, you know, that I think that does this to me. But I think it's still funny, because I'm looking at it, again, through one eye that looks in two directions. First, as a performer, is it funny? Is it clever? Secondly, as a man trying to relate to the cat on the corner again. You understand what I mean? Because first and foremost, I'm a performer. That's all I've ever done all my life. So I know he's got to weigh it, but what do? You've got to have the support of your people. But, geez, I just love saying the number one variety show in the country now, and starred in by a black man who is very, very funny.
But Amos and Andy was funny.
Don't do that to me. Don't do that.
Amos and Andy was funny. And Geraldine is funny, and the Deacon is funny. But can we afford, you know, at the level of the struggle we are for liberation,
yes,
you know, can we afford to continually entertain white people with shows produced by white men with a frame of reference of what we are? I mean, that's not defining ourselves. And the role of the entertainer to some extent, has to accommodate that relevance.
I think that the Amos and Andy was funny. I was embarrassed by it. I signed the letters, too, you know. But I say that I think at this point now, we've got more stars than we've ever had before, that I can afford the luxury, because in place of Geraldine, and in place of Flip Wilson, I have Don Knotts.
Well, we are, like, in one sense, limited, because we will never have the audience of a commercial channel.
Okay? But do you want that audience?
I'd like to have that audience. On the other hand, if getting that audience necessitated compromising our principles, I'd rather have 10 brothers out of the 200 million people in this country watch this show than to have the 200 million people in this country watch this show if it's irrelevant. Because I think being irrelevant is counterproductive. You know, and that brings me to the next point. You had a show that folded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I think, according to what you said, you were in another era.
You're being very kind.
You have a show now. You have a show now.
I was stone wrong.
And you could be the Breed.
Yeah. Well,
what would you do? I mean,
I don't know. But I would, I tell you what I wouldn't do, and maybe by that you can get a clue. I certainly wouldn't do nothing more than I'm doing as an entertainer today. In other words, I ain't gonna let them change me. Last time out, I let them put me in suits. I couldn't smoke. I couldn't say what I wanted to say. And though I put a lot of people to work, and I did a lot of things, and all of that, and I changed a lot of policies at NBC, you know, when they cats went, yeah, because, you know, I walked into the publicity office one day and I didn't see the black people, and I said, I don't understand this. It looks like the lilies of the white fields, you know, and that was it. And the guy went, oh, he's very bitter. And I went, well, the hell with it. I am very bitter. If I gotta surround myself with people that I know of, and we got capable brothers and sisters to do it. Now you go up to NBC and it's packed and jammed, and the executives are there, you know, but the only thing that they are carbon copies. Oh, the old fake cats in it.
You know,
the most relevant thing I think I was able to do was near the end of the series, I did a sketch with Nipsey Russell about how brothers treat brothers. And I did a very bourgeois cat going in to apply for a job, right? And very bourgeois with a three-button coat. As soon as he found out it was a brother, he took advantage of him. Right? In the cat's baggage to send him in. And the cat walked in and he said, damn! Hey, baby! That ain't the way he walked in. The white secretary was there. See, and he said, I'm here for the job and I'd like to apply. I've been okayed and I went through the IBM machines, and blah, blah, blah. Talked very proper. So he went in there, instead of identifying and saying, hey, what a groove it is to see you in this position. He didn't do that. He just put his feet up on the desk and said, go ahead and sign that. You know I'm straight. You know, and suddenly here's the brother sitting there trying to do something, and he is not protected. And it was a funny sketch, and we loved doing it. I got such complaints from NBC, you would not believe. And we never were to do another one. Because I think we went through a period where we were just pleased to see a black guy there. You know, there we are. There we are, we're in there. Because we needed that at that period. Now we've got to go on further. You know what I mean? And it's not just seeing the black cat there anymore. You know, it's like the guys, I will believe till I die that when the pressure came on the Madison Avenue and they said, you got to put black people into commercials, they said, we'll show them black people in a commercial. So they put them in the commercials where black people look ludicrous in. You know, because everybody has a white neighbor. You very rarely see two black women talking. And if they're black women talking, they're not the sisters. It's bourgeois, middle class, you know, straight hair. No dues, never a do. Ever, never, never a do, you know. Can't look like Gloria Foster. No chance, you know. You must look like, you know, the old days of tan confessions, you know. And that's it. And I look, and I say it on the stage sometimes. I say, it's ridiculous. Because it doesn't relate to anything.
You wearing a Free Angela button. Have you had any reaction from other people as a result of wearing that button?
Well, there was a fan of mine in a restaurant, and it was at the restaurant at the airport, and a guy walked up and asked for my autograph. And he was white, and he said, gee, the wife gets a big kick out of you when it's here on the laughing and all that. Sign this for the kiddies, you know. And I signed it, and he said, I was wondering if... And he started staring at the button that I was wearing, you know. this brother. And he was going like this, and he kept saying, I was, and he was trying to focus on it, because I was blowing his bubble, because they have an image of me, I guess, of another kind. My involvement with Angela is, again, the injustice of it all. Her political beliefs, you know, are her own. I don't share her political beliefs. I share her blackness. And I share the injustice to any black person. And there's no way that she's going to get the right kind of trial. We know that. It's stacked against her. They've made her the most wanted woman since Bonnie and Clyde. And I think that if a guy like myself wears a button, that's letting somebody in that crowd that I go around with know where my head's at.
You're now married to a sister.
Is she? I didn't know that. Jeez.
I'm absolutely, you know, flabbergasted by the fact that we as a people, almost without the underground, which they keep saying we got, and everything else, our underground is a soul underground. You know, don't take no trains or nothing. Just something happens. It's the same thing compared to, as soon as downtown gets the dance, we've gone on to another one. And nobody ever told us that they got it, and we didn't care about it. But when they get funky chicken, we're into something else.
It's something else. You know, it's the thing that we have that ain't no other people got in the world. It's that immediate eye-to-eye contact that says, champ. Or that says, yeah. That's that same thing again, that one word, yeah. And you're only, and it's not followed by he's down, right on, but really just, yeah.
You feel that we can solve our problem by having some type of army or some type of violent confrontation with whites?
No.
You know, there ain't no way that you can put four Cadillacs against a tank. Two rusty razors, you know, against an M1. And the flamethrower against a bottle of Coca-Cola with a rag in it. Ain't no way you can do that.
How is it that you're free enough to talk the way you're talking and be an entertainer? Because, you know, the rationale is that if I'm black and an entertainer, I can't be too involved with black causes and survive in an industry controlled basically by white people. How are you free enough, let's say, to come on Black Journal and relate to the brothers and sisters the way you are?
I think that it's called a respect for one's opinion. Because I've had too many white people come up to me and say, I don't like what you said on the David Frost show about such and such a thing. Well, but you sure had a lot of guts to say it. And the other point is, which is very, very good, ma'am, I really don't care. I don't give it. When I say this is a racist society in which we live in, everybody knows it is. That ain't no big statement to make. Maybe it's shocking to hear it from someone that you just watched the night before on Laugh-In. But it is, man. Cats say, well, how can you say that? White and black say this to me. How can you say that, man? You got it made. I said, I got it made because I had to fight all of that. But I then owe an obligation to my brothers and my sisters to let them know that it existed then, it still exists now, and I've been here for 40 years.
You know, I've got the house, I've got a wife, I've got children, I've got success. And now it is time for me to try in every way feasible to help the plight of my people and to gain our freedom. Because the fallacy is, man, and listen, let me say this, and I really mean it from the bottom of my heart, money don't make you free. Popularity don't make you free. Don't you know that? You know, sure, I live in Beverly Hills, but I'm shackled by the same things that happened to the brother in Watts. I've had my bosses say to me, cats that I work for, who, you know, really basically, give me a Jack and Trotter will say to me, Sam, geez, that was a little heavy statement you said on that. I said, but it's true, ain't it, Jack? He says, yeah, I know, it's true, but. I said, but you're... And that's the end of that. Because he's got to respect me. It's like when a brother comes to me and says, but man, you're a Jew. You know, I look at him and say, what's your religion? And he says, I'm a Baptist, or I don't have one, or I'm a Muslim. I said, well, our religion is blackness. Because if we ever get to the point where we started talking about he's a black Jew, he's a black Catholic, he's a black Baptist, he's a black Muslim, really, save for the titles that the papers put on people, then we're in trouble. Our real religion, and the thing that connects us all, is our blackness. The religion of blackness. That's it. Cut!